the left corner to Aguilla. Aguilla to the left circle. Passing to Yell. A shot. Save made by all. Aguilla. Rebound. Another shot. They score! The Flames win it! Yeah, baby!
They score!
And the sea of red erupts.
Flames Talk starts now on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Here's Pat Steinberg and Aaron Vickers.
All right, another week begins, and for the first time in a little while, a week begins with some recent Flames hockey after a 3-2 win Sunday night over the San Jose Sharks. A new week begins. It's Monday, February 24th. Welcome to the final week of February. Yeah, that just blew Vix's mind.
What?
It's Steinberg and Aaron Vickers along with you, Vix of NHL.com. Flames Talk on Apple, Spotify, Amazon, Seeker, or wherever you get your podcasts is coming at you from our Groundworks downtown studio. Welcome back, Vix, to Flames Talk. How are we doing, buddy?
Well, I don't even want to guess how long it's been since I'm so bad at gauging the calendar. When you said last week of February, as you noted, I'm like, what? We're already here?
We're already here.
Trade deadline, 11 days?
Trade deadline is
12?
No, less than that. 11 days away, 12 days away. It's Friday, March 7th, so whatever that is from now, 11 or 12 days from now is deadline.
Woo!
And now, from a Flames standpoint, after they returned from their break and played their first game in 15 days against San Jose on Sunday night, now the mother of all road trips begins. And I don't even say that lightly. Let's set it up. The gauntlet, the slobber knocker, as Wes said last week, and I like it, the mother of all six-game road trips.
No Wes Gilbertson references.
He's in Japan. You know what? You're out of sight, out of mind.
I feel like I got pulled out of the bullpen for Wes so he can go on vacation. I don't like it.
You would have been in this week anyway. You know that.
I know.
So here's how this mother of all road trips looks. Washington on Tuesday night kicks it off. Just the top team in the NHL. Number one overall in the President's Trophy winning spot right now. Then they roll into Tampa Bay on Thursday, a team that rolled the Flames up 8-3 at the Scotiabank Saddledome in December and has been to three of the last five Stanley Cup finals.
Not fazed.
Florida on Saturday just happens to be the defending Stanley Cup champions.
So last year.
Carolina on Sunday, a perennial Stanley Cup contender. Then they got Philadelphia next Tuesday, which, Philly would be the easiest of the marks on this trip. And then it wraps up in Dallas next Thursday. The Stars, of course, a Western Conference powerhouse and a perennial Stanley Cup contender over the last number of years as well. Then the trade deadline the following day. Whoa, buckle up. The next 11, 12 days or whatever it's going to be are A, going to be fun, and B, going to be hectic. But that's the way this road trip shapes up. Am I out of my depth by calling it the mother of all road trips?
It is going to be a bit of a slobber knocker. It's funny because you ran through the list of teams that they're going to face, and you kind of mentioned, Philly's there in there too. That just screams a little bit of a trap game on what is already a road trip that you've got to come out on the winning end of. However we want to define what a winning road trip looks like, we'll get into that. But you run through the names, the teams that they're going to see over the course of the next week and a half. This is not for the faint of heart. This part of me wants to call it a season-defining road trip, and part of me doesn't, simply because if you can come away with it with a reasonable sort of points percentage that you've run with throughout the year, you're still in a good spot. You're not in and you're not out, but it really has the makings of, we're going to find out what this Calgary Flames team really is over the course of this six gamer.
So I've got some questions. I've got questions about this upcoming road trip for you. Text lines open at 960-960 if you'd like to chime in on any one of these questions. Get your thoughts in. Let's start with this one. We just went through the six teams that they'll play on this trip. I think that we can all identify kind of like the easiest opponent, the one team that is outside of the playoffs right now, and that's the Philadelphia Flyers. But what about the other side? What's the toughest game the Flames will play on this trip? What is the most difficult of the opposition, or the most difficult game that they'll play during this six-game road trip?
So I'm going to put this back on you. I've got two.
Okay.
So do you want to go first, or do you have multiples as well? Just in case we double up.
I have the one that I think will be the most difficult.
Okay, you hit first.
Well, I actually, you know what? I'm going to go outside the box because the hardest game I think they're going to play is not even a road game. I think it is the seventh game of this road trip, which just happens to be 2 days after they play Dallas to technically finish off the road trip. They come home on the 6th of March in Dallas.
Yep.
They then stay over, travel on the 7th while deadline day is going on. The team will be in the air while the deadline is happening. Then they will land on the 7th, and then they got to play an early game against the Habs at home on the 8th, which might as well feel like another road game because you're barely going to get time in your own bed. And following that game against the Habs, they don't play again until the 12th, so they get 4 days without a game following that. I wonder if that game against Montreal isn't the hardest game of the entire stretch. Now, if that doesn't count,
It doesn't count. Okay. That's cheating. I understand the premise of there's travel and then a game the very next day.
Okay.
But that is a home game. Okay. I'm throwing that one out. That does not count.
How come it doesn't count again?
Because it's
on doesn't matter why it doesn't count.
Can we get Wes back?
I haven't.
Teed that up so well.
I'm ashamed
I fell for it.
I've never successfully been able to do that before.
Oh,
I feel good.
You could have at least picked Shan to do it too. Why you got to pick on me? I haven't been here in like a month.
Because I'm a clout chaser. It's Shan. What's it going to do if it's Shan?
What's it going to do if it's me?
Love you, Shan. Okay, then the most difficult game is the Carolina game.
Okay.
The second half of the back-to-back, and those are two not easy opponents, right? Like, you've got Florida, an afternoon game on the Saturday, the defending Stanley Cup champions, likely without Matthew Tkachuk, but nonetheless, you've got the Panthers on the Saturday afternoon. And then next thing, you've got the Hurricanes on the Sunday afternoon. Carolina's not as good as Carolina is. And we all, I think, are very, very fair in saying that they're a perennial Stanley Cup contender and one of the best teams in the league. They're still not a team that's, you know, you get up for. Like Florida, they're the defending Stanley Cup champions in their building. And, you know, you get up for that game against Washington. Tampa's always a hopping atmosphere. I feel like there's a lot that makes that game against Carolina difficult. On the second half of the back-to-back, you're probably going Vladar, and Vladar hasn't started at that point in weeks and weeks and weeks, just for so many different reasons. I think the most difficult game actually on the trip will be that game on March 2nd in Carolina, which is this Sunday.
This is hilarious because if you want to even extend it to the 7 games, like you mentioned with Montreal at home to sort of turn the schedule a little bit, I've got two separate ones outside of that. So if you include that as a 7-gamer, we're naming 4 of the 7 games because for me, the toughest test right off the bat, it's the one that kicks it off on Tuesday against the Washington Capitals. They're first in the NHL. They've got an 800 points percentage since Jan 1. Naturally, that's first in the NHL. Most goals for since January 1 at 76. They're scoring 3.8 per game. They've scored 15 goals in 2 games coming off the 4-nation break. And of course, since January 1, third fewest goals again. So like, if you want a measuring stick game, you're getting the team that's basically number one in everything right now to kick off the road trip. And then for me, what I consider to be the true finale of the road trip at Dallas, I'd entertain Dallas as an option for it being the toughest 1-2. One, you're closing out a road trip. You're going to be absolutely exhausted. Lots of travel. They're not a light team as well. You mentioned they're a perennial Western Conference sort of contender. Fourth highest points percentage at 738 since Jan 1. Fourth highest goals for per game. Seventh best goals against. And they just happen to be 8-1-1 in their past 10 as it stands now. We'll see what that looks like when next Thursday rolls around and they wrap up that road trip. But it's kind of funny. And talking about, okay, is this hyperbole that we're talking about this being a gauntlet or a slobber knocker, whatever adjective you want to use to describe this road trip? We just picked 3 of 6 and 4 of 7, including that Montreal back at home, in terms of what could be the toughest game in this sequence.
Which tells you how tough.
Which tells you everything you need to know about how tough, how difficult, but how important this next 2 weeks are.
What would be, question two, what would be a successful road trip in your opinion? Knowing where the Flames sit, knowing how tight this playoff battle is, knowing the opposition and the amount of games jammed into a short period of time, what is a successful road trip in your eyes for the Flames?
This is going to be a weird way to define it from my perspective. And again, I've kind of got two, so I'm hedging a little bit. But as long as whatever happens with the Vancouver Canucks over the same stretch, if you can stay within 3 points of that second spot in the West, the wild card spot, I'm okay. It doesn't matter if you go 0-6, as long as Vancouver doesn't go better than 1-4. They've got 5 games over that span. They play LA, Anaheim, Seattle, Anaheim, Minnesota. They've got some very winnable games in that stretch. So part of me goes, if you can stay within striking distance of that spot, knowing the teams you're playing versus the teams that Vancouver's playing, then you're okay. And maybe that's not success, but you're okay. Now, on the flip side, if that's not a good enough answer for you, if you can come away 500, if you can get 6 of 12 points on this road trip, that you're relatively within what you've been doing all season long, that's not going to put you back regardless of what the Vancouver Canucks managed to do. My question is, and we talk about how tough this road trip is, how realistic really is 500? That's the question I would pose back. Because, again, you ran through the list of teams that they're going to face. We rattled off 3 of 6 teams where that's going to be the toughest game of the road trip. Can you come away with 6 of 12?
I think, so you got 12 points on the table here.
Yep.
I think 5 or 6 points would be passable. But I think you've got to be above 500 even still to make this a successful trip in my eyes. So that would be something like 3-2-1. That to me, if you can win 3 of these games and get a point, scratch a point out of another one, I think that then I'll be able to deem it a successful one. 5 or 6 points, you probably keep yourself treading water. You have got a chance of being able to close the gap a little more if you can get 7 out of a possible 12. That to me, based on all, as difficult as this trip is going to be and as difficult as the opposition is, Flames want to be a playoff team. And doesn't matter if you're playing good teams or not, if you want to be a playoff team, you got to go above 500 in stretches of time. And so 3 wins with another loser point kind of mixed in there, that would be deemed successful in my eyes. And anything below that, I mean, unsuccessful would be like if they're only winning 1 or 2 games.
1-5.
Yeah, that would be super 1-4-1. You know, passable would kind of be in and around the 500 mark, 5 or 6 points. That's how I would phrase it myself.
For me, I'm okay with treading. Like, from my perspective, I would consider treading water to be a success, just knowing where you are in the standings, where Vancouver is, who they get to play during the same time span.
Yep.
And treading water keeps you in the hunt. And if you can survive these 5 of these 16, I don't want to look past Philadelphia because that's just being like, oh, is that where they're going to get 2 of their 6 points? And then it doesn't happen. It makes things that much more difficult. But just again, the hitter's row of Washington, Tampa, Florida, Carolina, Philly, Dallas to end it. If you can come away with 500 there, you're still going to be within 1 to 3 points of the Vancouver Canucks. And to me, if you can be that close within that striking distance, you're coming back maybe not feeling great about how the road trip went, but great about the position that you're in.
A couple of texts at 960-960. Wedley in Bridalwood says, the old Daryl Sutter quote, get more points than games played. And that's kind of where I'm at. You've got 6 games, get 7 points. Anything more than that just adds to the success factor. But get more points than games played. That's kind of where I'm at on this trip. And as Sean says, Sean in Auburn Bay, a successful road trip is 1 point better than Vancouver over their next 6. And that's also probably fair if you can do, but that, of course, a little bit more of a sliding scale, right? Because then it also takes into account what the Canucks are doing, which I think is relevant. I look at it more of the Flames taking care of their own business and Vancouver, what the Canucks do, not immaterial. And let's not forget St. Louis and Utah are still hanging around. I mean, that win from Utah, I saw a couple people, I think it was actually Thomas Drantz at The Athletic, who was suggesting pull the goalie if you're Utah because you need the full 4-point swing. Turns out that didn't need to happen. They won the game in regulation anyway, but that was a 4-point swing. Utah's got more games played than both the Canucks and Flames, but Utah is not played themselves out of this mix. And somehow St. Louis is still hanging in and I think 4 points back themselves. So, but yeah, 1 point better than Vancouver would be nice. And that would obviously keep you in the mix. But I look at it more of Vancouver's going to do whatever they do. The Flames give zero control over that other than the 1 remaining game they've got against the Canucks.
And I think my perspective is, in terms of defining what success is on this road trip, isn't so much about the road trip itself. It's the situation you find yourself in afterwards, where, again, if you come away 0-6, you're probably not thrilled about that. You're not calling that a success, even if Vancouver goes 0-5 during their stretch. That's just two teams that are sliding. So you do need to come away with some points on this road trip, but I'm more concerned about what is the vibe, what is your situation coming off this road trip, heading into the trade deadline after these six games on the road?
Let's go this one next. Flames have got six on the road. They're either playing every second day or back-to-back. They got the one back-to-back, but otherwise it's every second day on this trip. How do you see the goaltending split breaking down as of right now? Obviously, things change, and bad or really strong outings will alter a plan, but if you're making a plan right now of the next six games, how many is Dustin Wolf getting, and how many is Dan Vladar getting?
I like how you preface that, because it will depend on what you actually see over the course of this road trip. But if we're seeing the exact same things we've seen over the past 2 months, I think it's a 5-1 split. I think you're getting five for Wolf, and Vladar's, sorry, Dan, but you're getting the second of back-to-backs as per usual, and Dustin Wolf is going to carry the bulk of the load. And I know there's been some discussion, some questions, some things we've tossed around about, okay, well, what does riding Dustin Wolf look like? And he's a rookie goalie, and it's his first full year in the NHL, and how do these factors affect his durability or what you can do for a workload? He's tied for third in the NHL with 20 starts since December 14th. Like, this isn't new. This stretch of finding out what Dustin Wolf is, it's been going on for 2+ months now. They've been riding him for some time as their starter. Again, there's only two other goalies that have started more games than Dustin Wolf since December 14th.
You know what? Do you have them in front of you right now?
I don't, but Connor Hellebuck is definitely one of them.
Okay.
I don't remember who the second one is. And then there's three or four goalies. No worries. There's three or four goalies at that 20 game started mark. So there's no reason from my perspective to suddenly be concerned with what Dustin Wolf has been doing.
Let me, before I give you my answer, let me give you Ryan Huska's answer to that earlier this week. Francis asked him a little bit about kind of the same thing. He said, you know, safe to say you'll be really monitoring the workload of Dustin Wolf in the final 27, now final 26 games. And Ryan Huska was like, no, absolutely not. And here is the reason why.
We need to find a way to get as many points as we can. And if that means we're going to play Dustin 15 in a row because he's having success, so be it. If Vladdy gets in and he gets hot and he plays 15 in a row, so be it. We're at the point where we need to find a way to get as many points as we can.
So that speaks very loudly in your favor of 5-1, which is exactly where I am too. I think that the one planned start for Vladar right now is that game against Carolina on March 2nd. And honestly, even if Dustin Wolf allows zero goals the game before, I'm still going Vladar. You can't play Wolf every game. There's no sense in playing him in a back-to-back and really starting to mess with fatigue potentially coming into it. But otherwise, I'm comfortable playing him five of the six on the road here. I really am.
And so I was wrong. It wasn't Hellebuck. So the leader is Mackenzie Blackwood at 22, Vasilevsky 21, then Shesterkin, Wohl, Ottinger, Lukanen, and Swayman, along with Wolf, are all at 20.
Okay.
So he's seeing elite workload. Connor Hellebuck, 19, just for the reference there. So he's seeing basically, I don't know, do you call that elite usage? Whatever it is, it's number one usage.
Well, it's definitely number
one usage. It's high-end number one usage.
Yeah.
So they're playing the doors off of
Wolf
right now.
And most of those guys that you referenced are pretty high-end guys. I mean, what Blackwood's done.
Blackwood's got a 2.17 goals against and a .921 save percentage
over
22.
What he's done since getting there has been really impressive.
And then you're layering Shesterkin, Vasilevsky, Ottinger. Like, these are typically names that you find in and around that Vezina Trophy conversation.
Yeah. So we're kind of on the same page, hey?
Five and one.
And it's kind of hard. It's kind of hard to argue against that at this point, you know?
Well, when you play the clip, you need as many points as you can. No disrespect to Dan Vladar, but your best shot is Dustin Wolf night in, night out at getting you as many points. That's what we've seen through the body of work this season. That's why it split from a platoon situation where it was almost a full-on rotation where alternating starts to suddenly you've seen Dustin Wolf run out 20.
Do you still have the numbers up there for the goalies?
I do.
Because this text says, what is Wolf's record after that December date you just said?
2.46 goals against and a .915 save percentage.
Do you have the win-loss record there?
Yes, 12-6-2.
Pretty good.
I mean, that's the kind of run you need to put yourself into a wild card spot and stay there.
Ned says, what if you give Vladar game one of the doubleheader and Wolf the Sunday start to give him a little extra break in the middle of a road trip? I think the formula has worked in that more often than not, they have been able to find ways to win on the first half, and then you take your chances on the second half. And to me, that means the formula is working. That means that you're giving yourself at least the opportunity regularly to split a back-to-back. And so and then you roll the dice and see what happens. And the last time they did it, Vladar was able to respond and pick up a win. And the other thing is, whether you start Wolf on the Saturday or the Sunday, he's going to get a break in there. It's going to be a two-day break either on Sunday, Monday, or it'll be the two-day break on the Friday, Saturday. So regardless, he's going to get a break in there.
Yeah, I just think you go with what you've been doing this entire season in terms of back-to-back situations, particularly on the road where, yeah, sorry, Wolf's getting the start the first night, and Dan Vladar, we're hoping you can give us a chance, and we'll see where the cards fall from there.
This from Derek in Edmonton, Wolf for 5 out of 6 to see how he does with a full workload while also against top-tier competition in a short stretch. I think that'll be a very interesting and telling kind of way of looking at things and seeing how it ends up going. So yeah, we're on the same page there. 5 out of 6 for Dustin Wolf, 1 for Dan Vladar is kind of how this thing shapes up leading into a road trip. And again, could that change? Of course, but the plan right now, that's where both you and I would be when it comes to this. And finally, let me read you this text because it frames our last question about this road trip very nicely. Bob writes, can you imagine being Craig Conroy and management during the 6 games leading up to the deadline and teetering on selling or obtaining players based on game results? And that leads to my last question. How can this trip alter or change Calgary's trade deadline approach? And for me, there's only one way that it gets altered. Because regardless of what happens positively, I don't think the plan is going to change. For in fact, I can be quite confident. I'm very confident in saying, based on conversations I've had, even in the last 48 hours, that regardless of what happens here in the next 6 games, the Flames will not be transitioning to a hard buying team. At no point are they going to be looking for rentals or especially the high, like the expensive rentals. At no point are they going to be deviating from their big picture just to chase this season. You know, a tinkering move for a number 4 center or number 7 defenseman, sure, that would be the only kind of caveat outside of it. But otherwise, I don't think that approach is going to change at all in terms of them transitioning to be a buyer. However, and I still think that means that if something comes along like the Philadelphia trade, where you're bringing guys in that can be longer term parts of this group, then they're open to that. And that hasn't changed. And that will continue to be the case. But if all of a sudden, and I don't see this happening, I would put the chances of this quite low, Vix, but if all of a sudden they find themselves leading into the deadline 4, 5, 6 points out of a playoff spot, I do think that opens the door a little bit more for Conroy listening on some other types of deals and maybe being more open to trading players than he would have been had they been protecting or a point out of a playoff spot. Now, I'm not talking about Kadri and Coleman and those types of, or Anderson. I'm not talking about those types of guys, but I'm talking, you know what? Maybe listening a little bit more on a Martin Pospisil, or maybe listening a little bit more if somebody really wants a Braden Pahal or something like that. You know, guys that are very, very helpful members of this team, little bit more depth members of this team, but are essentially everyday players. I mean, Pahal hasn't missed a game.
Nope.
Pospisil has been a fairly regular guy up and down the lineup, and I think he's now slotted well as that number 4 right winger. Those are the types of guys that I think that maybe he's a little bit more willing to listen on. If they're still fighting tooth and nail and they're a point in or a point out, I don't think he's thinking about making those deals. All of a sudden, he's looking at a team 5 or 6 points out. Maybe a little bit more willing to listen, I think.
I'm so disappointed in you.
Why?
I wanted you to say something different so that I could just come at you with all the fury of a rock quote. from earlier.
Yeah.
Because for me, from my perspective, outcome of the road trip doesn't change the approach at all for me. If you can still add assets in that 23 to 27-year-old range, go ahead and do it. That's the Farabee Frost type of deal. If you're adding, if you're looking to add a rental that's a considerable asset, don't. It's going to cost you too much. It's going to be an expiring contract for the most part. Like, don't go down that road. If you want to tinker and add a depth defenseman for a low pick, sure. Go ahead and do that if you're still in that mix. If you want to keep some of your depth, like you mentioned a couple of names, you want to keep some guys and use that as your acquisition just by simply not selling off depth pieces, I'm okay with that too. But don't go big game hunting.
Yeah.
You go 6-0 on this road trip, don't go big game hunting. This isn't your window. This isn't the time to be selling off firsts and prospects to try to get yourself over the hump to become the first or second wild card from the West. This isn't the time to do that for me.
Just wait until hour two in the conversation we get.
I think that's where we'll get a little spirited.
Oh, baby. That's a little tease for the second hour of Flames Talk on this Monday.
That's when we're going to throw the gloves off.
Maybe, maybe not. I think it'll actually be a productive conversation. I don't think where you and I are on this conversation is all that drastically different, but
we'll find out.
We'll see. A couple more texts, 960-960. This from Jared. How many contracts can the Flames retain if they choose to be a broker in other deals? Wouldn't they be limited by the number they can hold? Yes. So they could do two. They still have money retained on Jacob Markstrom right now, but they have two of their three retention spots still available if they want to do that. And this one reads, play the doors off Wolf just so he's tired for a playoff run as a question. Well,
Got to get there first.
And yeah. I am playing the doors off Wolf. And if he's tired come the playoffs, he's tired come the playoffs. And I know that's a big about face for me, but until he starts to show you real detrimental effects of fatigue, which I have yet to see, like real detrimental effects, then I'm continuing to, play the doors off him. You know, we talked about how, hey, let it buck and see how he goes. Well, so far he's gone pretty good. And yes, he lost those three straight games leading into the break. Bounced back pretty nicely after some rest. Yeah, I'm playing the doors off him for now until I start to see some detrimental effects of fatigue.
And I mean, in all fairness, to defend Wolf on that three-game losing streak heading into the break, he averaged something like 31 shots against a game. Like, that's not sustainable for the way the Flames want to play.
Steinberg and Vickers, we're underway this hour on Flames Talk. Thanks for being with us on a Monday. Can't find the latest episodes of your favorite HGTV, Discovery, and Food Network shows? Rogers Xfinity TV has the newest seasons of the top-rated shows on these popular channels, while other providers are no longer including them in their TV lineup. If your TV provider doesn't carry these channels, you're missing out on new seasons of Celebrity IOU, Hometown, Beat Bobby Flay, Expedition X, and more. Do not be fooled by other channels pretending to be these networks you know and love. Get the latest with Rogers Xfinity TV at Rogers.com.
You're locked on Flames Talk, only on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
And our Monday edition of Flames Talk rolls on this hour with Aaron Vickers. My name is Pat Steinberg. And now Daily Flames Roundtable time, brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. The simpler way to sell your vehicle is with their expertise. Visit Mercedes-Benz Country Hills just minutes from the airport. Derek Wills joins us now to complete our Daily Flames Roundtable on this Monday. Gents, Connor Zeri back in the lineup for the first time in almost 2 months, for the first time in 16 games on Sunday as part of that 3-2 win against San Jose. What do we make of Connor Zeri's return to action on Sunday?
Well, it was a hard game to really evaluate the team or any players on the team for me, just because for Connor Zeri, he didn't play in 15 games. For the Flames, they didn't play in 15 days. So, you know, the team was good at times and not so good at other times. And I thought Connor Zeri got off to a good start in last night's game, but, you know, maybe hit a bit of a wall about halfway through it. But I think that was to be expected. I mean, to your point, Pat, he hadn't played in almost 2 months, and I'm sure he was excited to play again, but there was going to be a little bit of rust there, more for him than for the other guys, who certainly looked rusty at times last night. But, you know, he's a guy who can certainly be a very dynamic offensive player for the Flames. And despite probably not being at his best last night, still had three shots and a hit and a block and played just over 16 minutes in in that 3-2 victory over the Sharks. So I think a good first step for Connor Zary, and I'm sure you'll feel better about just settling in and about being on an old/new line with Michael Backlund and Blake Coleman when he gets another game under his belt against the Capitals tomorrow.
And honestly, I'm a little surprised he only finished with three shots because, again, for the first 30 or 40 minutes, he seemed all around it for that line. Finished with six shot attempts, expected goals, Wes Gilbertson, of 57.1%. To me, he did fade. But that's kind of natural when you've missed 15 games, when you're playing your first game in 6 weeks. So overall, I thought it was a positive sort of first step, and that's why I didn't mind him returning on the wing. I know a couple weeks ago we had a discussion, okay, well, you brought in Frost and Farabee. What do you do with Zary when he comes back? And I was a big proponent of put him on the wing, probably with Backlund Coleman, where he'll be insulated a little bit, and he can just get back to doing the things that he was successful at doing earlier in the season, where he was one of Calgary's most dynamic forwards for my money. Putting him in a safe landing spot with those two veterans where everybody seems to flourish, to me, was the right move. And I think he'll only grow from this performance, this outing, as he gets back up to full game speed again, first game in 6 weeks.
Yeah, you know, guys, like, I first of all, I agree with, like, both your assessments. I'm on the same page as you. And it was kind of exactly what I expected. You know, first of all, as Willsey, as you said, weird game to evaluate, period, because both teams are coming off extended breaks. And so there was, like, let's be honest, that was a chop fest or slop fest for most of Sunday on both sides. And I think that you kind of expected that from the game as a whole. And for Zary, you know, you mentioned it after, because he was our first intermission guest on Sunday night, Willsey, and you mentioned after I threw back to you, you're like, yeah, it looked like he didn't miss a beat, and I was kind of on the same page. And then immediately as the second period started, it felt like all of a sudden he looked a lot more tentative, because I was with you. I thought he had a pretty good first period, and yeah, started to fade as the game went along. But that was exactly what I expected. Guys coming back from a significant knee injury, and yes, it only kept him out 15 games, but if you think about it realistically, it probably would have been, like, if you think about how many games they would have played had there not been a break, and factoring in a regular All-Star break, like, we're probably talking like he misses 21, 22 games when it's all said and done. Like, that's a quarter of a season essentially he missed. So comes back with only a few practices under his belt, and so I think that was exactly what I was expecting him to look like, and it's only going to get better. I think he'll have a much better 60-minute effort against Washington and then against Tampa, so on and so forth, as this trip continues and as his return progresses. You know, and it's why, as I think about it, Willsey, it's why I think keeping him on the line with Backlund and Coleman for the time being makes a lot of sense. I'm not sure if that is the ideal place for him long term, but I think to start, it's a great place for him. I'm not sure we see him move back to center at any point unless there's an injury down the middle, but where he fits on what line as a winger, I think for the time being, because we know how steady Backlund and Coleman are, we know kind of exactly what to expect from that line each and every night. It's a great landing spot for a good player coming off of an injury. And then you can evaluate later on if there's a better place for him, or like a better fit for him to have his offensive talents really exploited and maximized. But yeah, I'd be keeping him there for now for sure.
Yeah, I would be surprised unless, like you said, there's an injury, if he played center again this season. But I do think that his future is up the middle. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't sure about that. And you were a big proponent of Connor Zary moving to center, and he did. And I thought he acclimated really well. You know, he plays the game fast, and quite often he would be the deepest forward back in the defensive zone. And then he's so good in transition, he would be leading the charge against the offensive blue line, really good at exits and entries. So I do think that because of the Flames' depth down the middle right now, you've got Nazem Kadri, you've got Michael Backlund, and now you've got Morgan Frost. I think Connor Zary probably, if everybody's healthy, finishes the season on the wing. But he, I think, can potentially give the Flames a third scoring line. Now, we'll see how these lines play out, but we saw some new combinations, and I saw some good things from those new combinations, whether it be Kadri between Huberdeau and Coronado now, or whether it be the new look second or third line, depending on how you want to number them, with Frost between Farabee and Sharon Govich, and then of course the line we just talked about with Backlund between Zary and Coleman, and hey, even the fourth line chipped in offensively in last night's victory over the Sharks. And you know, for a Flames team that doesn't have those super elite players, they need a balanced scoring attack. So if you can got three lines that can do some damage on a pretty regular basis, then I think it gives you a much better chance to score and to win.
Yeah, for me, I think the landing spot that he's in now with Backlund and Coleman, that's something you leave for 3 to 5 games. Get him back up to speed, get him back to 100% game speed, and then reevaluate from there. Because to be quite honest, I could see him playing on three different lines for the Flames right now, just with what he brings, the punch that he has, the creativity that he has, his transition ability that he has. If something's not going right with one or two of your other lines and everything's still okay with Zary, Backlund, Coleman, I still wouldn't hesitate to break them up to see if Zary can spark something else down the road, of course.
So, Zary returned Sunday in the game against San Jose, and the Flames come away with a 3-2 victory. Again, was it the prettiest victory of all time? Probably not.
No.
But it was a victory nonetheless. So how do we, Daily Flames Roundtable, Derek Wills, Aaron Vickers, Pat Steinberg, how do we grade that 3-2 win over San Jose? Or how do we evaluate what we saw at the Dome on Sunday?
What do you want, like a letter grade?
However you want to do it, or just kind of your overall assessment of it.
Well, if you want a letter grade, I'll give you a couple. Ultimately, it's a results-based business, especially when you are fighting for the final playoff spot in the Western Conference, as the Flames are. And, you know, the Canucks have lost two games coming out of their Four Nations break, and Flames had a game in hand going into last night's and an opportunity to close the gap from 3 points to 1. So I give them an A+, because I've seen a lot of bad hockey from a lot of good teams since the Four Nations break came to an end. Just look at the guys up north. You know, just blow it out in a couple of games coming out of the break. And we know that they're a heck of a lot better than what we saw in those two games. So I was a little bit worried about last night's game. Clearly, the Flames are a better team on paper and have been on the ice than the Sharks this season. But you just don't know what to expect after a long layoff like that. So all they really had to do last night was find a way to pick up 2 points. And it definitely wasn't pretty at times, but they got the job done. As far as how they played, let's be honest, and I think we heard this from coaches and players postgame last night, they're not going to get away with that type of game against certainly 5 of the 6 teams they're going to face on this season-long 6-game road trip. Do you get away with that kind of game against the Flyers? Maybe, maybe not. But I think it's safe to say you're not getting away with that type of game, which I would call probably like a B- or a C+ game for the Flames, maybe even just a C or a C-, depending on how you look at it. But they're not going to get away with that against the league-leading Capitals tomorrow, or against the Lightning, or against the defending Stanley Cup champion Panthers, or against the Hurricanes, or against the Stars. I think you could literally refer to all 5 of those teams as legitimate Stanley Cup contenders. So they're going to have to certainly bring their A game, or at least their B or B+ game, if they're going to pull off some upsets on this road trip. So ultimately last night, they did what they had to do. They found a way to win the hockey game. They got 2 important points, but I think they know they're going to have to be better moving forward.
Yeah, I grade on a curve a little bit on that one, because as you mentioned, both teams are coming off a couple of weeks of vacation time. It was choppy. It was sloppy. It was disjointed, but they found a way. And at the end of the day, the most important thing is how many points you come out with, not what it looked like. It wasn't a Picasso. You were painting a barn, but you found a way because you got some depth scoring. You got some good goaltending, and you were playing a team that, to be perfectly honest, is in the bottom of the basement. So you did what you had to do to get the result you needed to make sure that you were closing the gap on a team that you're chasing in the Vancouver Canucks. Wasn't pretty. It's not going to be. And I think that if they bring that game on the road trip, they get swept in all 6. I think Philly can beat the game that the Flames put forth against San Jose. But again, it's the first game in 2 weeks. Throw out the video. Move on. Hit the ground running on a road trip.
Yeah. I mean, kind of my exact same answer to this question as to the Zary answer. I mean, honestly, guys, it was kind of exactly what I was expecting going into that game for a lot of different reasons. Number one, they hadn't played in 15 days. Neither had the Sharks. Number two, you're talking about a team that is not the, you know, we can talk. I loved watching Celebrini last night. The guy's an absolute monster stud. but it's still the Sharks. They're still the last place team in the NHL. Like half the people on the roster are like, who? Let me just take a look at my program.
Just for some perspective there, they would need to win three straight to catch Chicago for 31st.
Yeah.
Like, not happening.
It's a bad hockey team. And by design. I mean, they're trying
to... They've lost 11 of 12 or 12 of 13 going back. Sorry.
And they were competitive last night, all that type of stuff. But, like, that's a hard game to get up for. Plus, you're back after 15. It's going to be sloppy to begin with. You're working Zeri back in. And then you add on top of that the fact that as much as they were preaching, going out of their way from the coaching staff down, preaching... Well, yeah, what road trip? Road trip? We got a game against San Jose on Sunday. But everybody on that roster, everybody on the ice surface on Sunday night knew what was looming and knew this six-game gauntlet that's going to kick off on Tuesday. And I think that the focus on making that road trip as successful as possible and not having that road trip turn into something that completely snowballs in the wrong direction, as much as the San Jose game was there, I think it's almost impossible not to... in some way, shape, or form, look past the Sharks and all with all those circumstances there. And I think the Flames were guilty of doing that at some points on Sunday. And I almost give them a pass. Like, normally, a game like that where they close out, I'd be probably kind of in the, yeah, well, you know, okay, you won the game, but you know, that's not a game that you can duplicate going forward. But I don't think they're going to. There were so many circumstances that played into that game being meh that, you know, you kind of shrug it off and say, okay, let's just see what they do now on this road trip. And here's the last thing that I'll say, guys, and I'm curious as to where you are on this particular point. But, you know, they now have 26 to go, so we're approaching. At some point on this road trip, they'll cross over from the third quarter to the fourth quarter of the season. And at some point, if this team stays in the playoff mix, which I fully expect them to do, as tough as this road trip is, I don't expect them to fall 5-6 points out of a playoff spot at any point, because every time it felt like maybe it was white flag time for the Flames, they've always found a way to work their way back into it, as the last couple of days have been evidence of. And so we're getting close to the point where, for me, it's just win, baby. And you've kind of, and I'm not there yet, but getting to the point where it's like, okay, maybe it's after the trade deadline, I don't know. But at some point in the not-so-distant future, it's going to turn into, okay, yeah, well, maybe they were junk from start to finish, but Dustin Wolf stole them the game. They got the 2 points. That's all that matters. And at some point, that transition is going to begin. And I think that we're moving pretty close to that happening.
The only thing about that, Pat, is I do think the process matters. And more often than not, if you play the right way and you are the better of the two teams, you will win the game. That doesn't happen each and every night. We know that. Sometimes you need a little puck luck. Sometimes you can't make the most of your opportunities. And those games are going to happen. But I think if you play the right way, and for the Flames, you know, they've got to be tight defensively. They need great goaltending. They need a balanced attack offensively. You know, they're not a team that can rely on one or two or three guys to put them on their back and lead them to wins on a regular basis. That's just not how the Flames are built. So I think they got away from playing the right way against the Sharks, but they got away with that because they were playing the Sharks, who finished dead last season and are dead last again this season. The other thing about the Flames is I do think they tend to play better against teams that are more structured. The Sharks are not structured. The Blackhawks, you know, they've had trouble with them over the last two or three years, better this year, but, you know, not a structured team. So I'm actually anxious to see how the Flames look against some more structured teams on this six-game road trip. We'll start to find out against the Capitals team that, hey, if you look at the underlying numbers for the Capitals, I don't know about you guys, but I'm wondering how the heck they are, where they are in the standings. And that's right at the top. I mean, goaltending and a super high shooting percentage would explain it, I suppose. But, you know, I look at that team on paper and, yeah, they're good, but I don't think they're President's Trophy good. So we'll see. But I do think that the Flames will be tested on this road trip. They're not going to get away with playing the way they played against the Sharks. But I also think that for the Flames, like a lot of teams coming out of the Four Nations break, they just needed a game to get their game back. And I suspect they'll be a lot better against the Capitals on Tuesday.
Yeah, they needed to just get a game. And to be perfectly honest, San Jose was probably a teed up game to come back to knock the rust off. So it worked in their favor. Had they played a Colorado or a Washington or whoever you name it, Dallas, I don't know if they necessarily leave with the 2 points. But at the end of the day, getting the 2 points is the thing that matters the most. I agree the process does matter. But what matters right now for a team that has aspirations of making the playoffs, it's there's no silver linings. There's no bright side to coming away with 0 or 1 point right now. 2 points matter most. Process matters as well. But at the end of the day, just secure wins.
Yeah.
I mean, you're playing against really good teams. You might play an A game, and you still might need Dustin Wolf to steal it for you. Just because there are some teams in the league that have a bit more talent or have generational players that the yep. Flames simply don't have right now.
Yep, 100%. And really, I mean, for the most part this year, it's been kind of a weird season. Like, I don't remember years quite like this. When the Flames have played well, they've given themselves a chance at the very least almost every night. When the Flames have not played well, like almost without fail, they've been ran over, except for the Winnipeg game where they were not very good and got schooled by the Jets, but Dustin Wolf put on a virtuoso performance and stole that one. They've been much better against the teams below them than they have against the teams above them, whereas usually we've gotten, especially over the last couple of
Chicago
years...
Chicago Blackhawks.
We've kind of gotten used to them giving up points against teams they shouldn't and pulling off some really big wins against teams that they shouldn't, maybe. It's been a weird season for a lot of those things, so curious to see what this road trip looks like for Calgary. It starts Tuesday night in Washington, and that's the next time we'll chat with you, Wilsey. Have a great rest of your Monday. Thank you, pal.
Okay, guys. Have a good night.
He is Derek Wills. He's Aaron Vickers. My name is Pat Steinberg, and that'll start to wrap us up on our Daily Flames Roundtable on this Monday. It's brought to you, as always, by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. The simpler way to sell your vehicle is with their expertise. Visit Mercedes-Benz Country Hills just minutes from the airport.